Sometimes the emotional power of a story defies an introduction. This is one such story. It comes to us from Kemp Powers, who tells it in a memoir called The Shooting. Kemp Powers sat down with Anne Strainchamps.
The rough outline of what happened is, well, you stated in one sentence at the beginning of your book, when I was 14, I shot my best friend in the face and watched him die. What actually happened?
We were all kind of, I guess the word was, gun enthusiasts as kids, as most kids in Brooklyn were at that time. My mom was actually in the Army Reserve, so she had several firearms in the house. And we would always toy around with them when she wasn't home, and she never really knew this. So one day, two friends of mine came over, and we were playing around with the guns, and I was doing what I thought was a fake game of Russian roulette. And I didn't realize a bullet was in the chamber, and pulled the trigger, pointed at one of my friends, and it went off, and it hit him right in the face. And when I say watched him die, I mean that's the best way to describe it, because I was feeling absolutely helpless and panicked. You know, I was just trying to figure out some way I could save him. And yeah, it was traumatic is an understatement for the moment.
What happened right after you shot him?
Well, he looked at me, and I mean that's probably one of the images that's going to be, I guess, burned into my soul forever, that I'll never forget, is just he, because when the gun went off, he turned. And I honestly didn't even think it hit him at first. So I was like, oh my goodness. And I said, are you okay? And when he turned back around, he had his hand over his mouth. So I still didn't know he was hit. And then he lowered his hand, and that's when I saw the bullet hole. And he was looking at me, like, shocked, and opened his mouth, and he just started exhaling blood.
Did he have time to say anything to you?
He couldn't speak. It was just gurgling sounds, and, you know, like, it sounded like he was trying to scream, but he couldn't get the sound out.
What did you do?
I mean, me and my friend, we both freaked out. The first thing I did was I ran to try to get some towels to stop the bleeding. So I, like, ran to the linen closet, and by the time I got back to the room, he was actually walking into the living room. So he had, like, taken a few steps, and I, you know, put the towels on his face. Then I figured, you know, I better go try to get some help. So I told my other friend who was there at the moment to, you know, hold the towels on his face. And I ran out into the hall, just banging on neighbors' doors. He fell over onto his face, like, right before I got out the door. And I don't know, it's just, I'm assuming it couldn't have been more than just a few minutes, but it seemed like that moment took like an hour. I mean, I just was running from one neighbor's door to the next and banging on neighbor's door. I got to one neighbor's door, and it's a New York thing where you live in these apartment buildings and you never know the people who live around you. You could live next door to someone for 20 years and never know them, never know their name. But I finally got to one neighbor's door and knocked on the door, and he opened it up, and I guess I had blood all over my shirt. I was like, you gotta come help me. You know, my friend, he's been shot. Please come help. And he just closed the door on me, which really freaked me out even more, like, no one's going to help us out here. And I ran downstairs. I was headed down to the street, and the police were actually on their way up. So, you know, I dragged them upstairs and just were begging them to help my friend, and, you know, he died.
Part of what makes the tragedy so especially horrible is that you and Henry had been very close. I mean, you described him in the book as your best friend. What was he like?
I mean, he was like a really great kid. I mean, you have these images in your mind of, like, city kids being, you know, really reckless and getting into a lot of trouble, and he wasn't any of those things. He was literally like the voice of reason among our little group. He came from a very religious family. I never, ever heard him utter a curse word, which is unusual for our group, because every third word that came out of our mouths was a curse, and he never cursed at all. You know, he was just the most loyal and, like, reliable friend that any of us had. So when he died, I mean, it affected a lot of people profoundly.
When you think of him now, and I know you've thought of him a lot over the years, has he stayed the same age in your mind, or has he kind of grown with
you? Yeah, that's part of what's kind of troubled me at times.
Why?
You know, I think about it, and I actually, this whole ordeal has really made me, you know, I think a lot about things like religion and faith, and I'm just trying to find my way in those areas. But, you know, I mentioned it in the book even. I just say, you know, one of the things that really haunted me was, like, the older I got, like, what do I say to this 14-year-old if I ever see him again? You know what I mean? Like, how can I make him understand?
So there's a part of you that feels like he didn't understand and you're still struggling to try to make sense of it for him?
Yeah, yeah.
How about you? Have you been able to make sense of it for yourself? Or
I mean,
you...
it shouldn't have happened. It just shouldn't have happened. There's no excuse to be made. I mean, that it should have never happened.
Now, did you ever have, over the years, family members say to you, well, it must have been God's will?
Well, it's not something my family ever talked about.
At all?
No, no.
That must have made it really hard on you.
It did. It made it very hard. I mean, I didn't know what people were thinking, but it was just, it was kind of like it became a taboo subject. I mean, just no one wanted to talk about it.
One of the most moving and remarkable things about what happened immediately after the shooting is that Henry's family showed this remarkable kind of grace. I mean, they completely forgave you.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering whether that actually made it harder.
It made it a lot harder. I mean, because it didn't seem right. It just seemed incomprehensible. Because if the tables had been turned and something had happened to me, I couldn't imagine my mom being that forgiving or anyone's family being that forgiving. And I just, it didn't add up in my own mind. It just didn't make any sense. You know, I had been preparing, I guess, in the days immediately after it happened for the reaction from everyone, you know, just this overwhelmingly negative reaction. And just, I was prepared to just deal with that. I'd kind of like come to terms with it almost like, oh my goodness, you know, this. And to have that happen, it just throws you for a loop, you know. It's like preparing for a punch and being hugged.
So you were waiting for punishment. You were waiting for that other shoe to drop, and then just nothing happened. His parents refused to press charges. You didn't go to jail. You didn't go to a juvenile facility. So you were left without any really formal way to atone. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. And I guess that's what I've been trying to do ever since. You know, that's a lot of what I write about is how feeling like nothing is ever enough, eventually you just crack. My daughter, when she was about 18 months old, got very, very sick and she almost died. And it really brought back a lot of memories about him. And it made me, for a long time, I was feeling like it was some kind of divine redemption. You know, I feel like his family lost a child and, you know, now it was time for me to lose a child. And it made it very, very difficult for me to be left alone with my young daughter for a long time because I was just concerned that something would happen if she were left alone with me. I was very, very uncomfortable.
This book is about something that happened to you that was so terrible that for 15 years you never even spoke about it. What was it that happened that made you want to break your silence?
You know, I don't know if I was even really ready, but I just felt like I had to do it. I mean, it's still something that I have a great deal of difficulty speaking about. It was a lot easier. It wasn't easy to write about, but it was easier to write about than it is to actually talk about, to discuss. But, you know, I just thought it was important that I get it out.
What was the hardest part to write?
I mean, the event itself, the shooting, was very, very difficult. It took me a long time to actually recount all the details of that. I mean, I remembered it very well, but it was just very difficult to sit down and write down the words and get that out. So, I mean, obviously that was by far the most difficult part.
There's a place in the book when you write that whoever you were before the shooting happened died along with Henry. Do you ever wonder who you would be if the shooting hadn't happened?
Yeah, I do, because I do believe that, like, I might have been a completely different person if that day had never occurred. And it's actually something that's a bit disturbing.
Yeah.
A lot of times, because, you know, we were city kids and we were honor students, but at the same time, you know, we liked making mischief here and there. And I can't help but wonder, like, I would have probably never left New York. I mean, that's almost a certainty. I was one of those city kids who, like, barely ever left the block, let alone thought of going anyplace else, which makes me feel like I probably would have never become a writer. I feel like I would have been a completely different person. And the thing that kind of is disturbing to me is I think I might have been a worse person.
Hmm. Yeah, that's scary. And that does take you into that, you know, those sort of questions about God's will, fate, things like that. I mean, you said earlier this should never have happened. And yet isn't that a bit like saying I shouldn't be who I am now?
Well, there you go. Now you have my my quandary.
Kemp Power's memoir is called The Shooting. Anne Strainchamp spoke with him. At age 14, Kemp Powers shot and killed his best friend.